new path of us.
And now, shining the spotlight on the future of hockey, the World Juniors.
Joshua Wall walks in, got the one.
Major Junior.
This is Logan Stankoven. I play for the Kamloops Blazers.
Hey, it's Matt Potcher from the Guelph Storm.
This is Axel LaRue from the Halifax Mooseheads.
Natai Gauthier. I play for the Quebec Ramparts.
Hey, guys. This is Ty Nelson from the North Bay Battalion, and this is the Pipeline Show.
NCAA.
This is Ryan McAllister for the Western Michigan Broncos.
This is Wyatt Kaiser from Minnesota Duluth.
This is Brock Faber from the University of Minnesota.
The NHL Draft.
This is Adam Fantilli of the University of Michigan.
This is Ryan Leonard. I play for Team USA.
I'm Nate Danielson of the Brandon Lee Kings.
My name is Adam Guyam. I'm playing for Chippewa Steel.
Hi, I'm Christian Sochin. I'm with the Seattle Thunderbirds.
Hey, this is Jacob Fowler, goaltender for the Youngstown Phantoms.
I'm Connor Bedard for the Regina Pats, and this is the Pipeline Show.
And more.
Bring it!
This is the Pipeline Show.
Hello once again, everyone. My name is Guy Flaming. Welcome to the Pipeline Show. Of course, the program is brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky, Alberta's best. You can't win friends with salad. You can pick up your delicious beef jerky from Wilhauk at 3 Edmonton and area locations. That would be Leduc, Spruce Grove, or in West Edmonton Mall, or go to their website at wilhaukbeefjerky.com. And any order, any size, anywhere in Western Canada, they will ship it to you. Your taste buds will thank me for it. Let them know you heard about it on the Pipeline Show. Thank you for stopping by this week and downloading your episode from Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or maybe you're streaming it on iHeartRadio or picking it up from the Podbean, wherever you're getting your copy of the program from. I really appreciate it. If you're listening on a Saturday afternoon or a Monday evening and hearing the Pipeline Show, then you're probably tuned in to EdmontonSportsTalk.com. Lots to get to on this week's episode. I have three really solid guests coming up today. I'll tell you who they are momentarily, but let's get to the news and notes this week, and we'll start with the CHL playoffs as we are now into the conference finals in all three leagues. One of them got going on Thursday night. That was Baie-Comeau and Cape Breton. Bit of a good news, bad news week for the Cape Breton Eagles. The bad news, they lost game one 4-0 at the hands of the Drakkar. The Drakkar, the number one seed out of the queue this year, they've been the top team in the standings, and they blank Cape Breton 4-0 in the opening game of their series. The other series in the queue will begin on Friday, Drummondville against Victoriaville, the Battle of the Villes. We have extensive queue preview coming up later this episode, so we'll just move on to the OHL. Both conference finals get going on Friday as well. The Oshawa Generals taking on the North Bay Battalion, and the London Knights square off against the Saginaw Spirit. They are the number one and number two teams in each conferences, and you can almost flip a coin for both of them. Should be really exciting hockey in the OHL conference finals. Scoring race in the OHL playoffs right now really tight as well. Dylan Rubrick from the Oshawa Generals, Gavin Hayes from the Sioux Greyhounds, who have been eliminated, and North Bay's Sandis Vilmanis, as well as Philip Meshar from the Kitchener Rangers, who are also eliminated. All four of those guys, though, with 16 points. That's how close the race is. Dallin Wakely from the North Bay Battalion and Justin Ertl, also from North Bay, have 15 points, in Oshawa's Beckett Seneca, who is draft eligible this year, with 15 points. So it's a really tight race. You'll notice I didn't mention anyone from London. Kasper Holtonen is their leading scorer in the postseason. He's got 11 points. They've only played 8 games, though. A couple of sweeps there for the London Knights. Closer to home in the Western Hockey League, although no Alberta teams left in the playoffs. You got 2 from Saskatchewan that will collide to start their conference final. In the East, you've got the Saskatoon Blades and the Moose Jaw Warriors. And in the West, it's the Prince George Cougars against the Portland Winterhawks. Both of those series also beginning on Friday. And both of them, I'm on record, flip a coin. I'll take Saskatoon, because they were my pick at the start of the year and at the start of the playoffs to come out of the East. So to be consistent, I'll do that. And I believe I said the Prince George Cougars. I might be wavering a little bit. I like Portland's veteran depth. They got a 19-year-old goaltender instead of a rookie goaltender. But Ravensbergen's been really good in Prince George, too. So I think both of those series could potentially go 7 games. Stats leaders in the WHL playoffs. Denton Matejczuk, a defenseman with the Moose Jaw Warriors, Columbus Blue Jackets prospect, He's got 19 points. That leads the Dub in playoff scoring. His teammate, Jagger Furcus, drafted by the Seattle Kraken, he's got 18 points. And you've got Riley Height up in PG with 16. TJ Ginla, 15 points. And Zach Funk also in Prince George with 15, as does Andrew Crystal with the Kelowna Rockets. Now, Ginla and Crystal both done, obviously. Ginla making an impact for Canada at the World U18s. We can go there next, as day two has just wrapped up. I did not have a chance to watch day one. I was in a car going to and from Calgary, but I did watch Canada's game on Friday morning against the Czech Republic or Czechia. Was not a really entertaining game. Way too many penalties, not a lot of flow, but Canada dominated. I mean, it was 4-0 before the 10-minute mark of the first period. Canada scored 5 seconds into the game. That was something. Your leading scorers in the U18, this is after action on day two, Gavin McKenna and Porter Martone, both with Canada, with 5 points. Emil Hemming from Finland with 4 points. Malcolm Spence, he has 4 points. And James Hagens from the United States also with 4. Konsta Hellenius of Finland with 4. Keep in mind, the U.S. has only played one game, that on day one, where they lit up Slovakia by a score of 9-0. Canada's first two games, they beat Sweden 6-3 and then had their way with the Czech Republic today, 6-0. So they've got a pretty light schedule to close out the round robin portion. Their next game is against Switzerland on Sunday. Then they have a day off, and Tuesday they ended against Kazakhstan. So a couple of the games where you might expect the scores to get out of control, still to come here for Canada. Playoff update out of the BCHL in the Alberta side. We got one sweep. The Sherwood Park Crusaders taking out the Blackfalds Bulldogs in 4 consecutive games. Meanwhile, Brooks and Okotoks, they are deadlocked at 2 games each. So that one is going at least 6 games. And in the BC portion of the BCHL, Alberta Valley gets through the second round with a 4-game sweep of the Chilliwack Chiefs. This coming after a first round where they went 7 games against Coquitlam. So the Express pushed the Bulldogs to 7 in the opening round, but the Bulldogs had their way with the Chiefs in round 2. Salmon Arm is up 3-1 on West Kelowna. Penticton ahead of Vernon 3-1. And between Surrey and Victoria, it's a 3-2 lead for the Surrey Eagles. Dipping south of the border, second round in the USHL playoffs is almost complete. 3 series of the 4 are done. Fargo has swept the Tri-City Storm. The Storm playing without their best player, Trevor Connolly, who decided to go to Finland to play with the United States at the World U18. Meanwhile, Sioux City swept the Lincoln Stars. So it will be Fargo against Sioux City in the one conference final. And in the Eastern Conference, Dubuque is through. They lost game 1, 2-0 against Youngstown, but rattled off 3 straight to take out the Phantoms. The Fighting Saints are awaiting their opponent, who will be either Muskegon or Green Bay. Green Bay has won game 1 and 4. Muskegon won the 2 in the middle. Game 5 goes Friday night. Oh, getting back, I mentioned it was a good week, bad week for the Cape Breton Eagles. A good week because they won the lottery in the Q, so they will have the number 1 pick in the Q's draft. That was the good news portion that I forgot to mention. NHL signings since last week's episode, just a handful this week. I think I mentioned Alex Jeffries, no longer at Merrimack, as the New York Islanders signed him. University of Denver loses a couple more players this week. Sean Barron's defenseman, now with the Colorado Avalanche, and Tristan Bros is off to join the Pittsburgh Penguins. So there will definitely be some turnover and some new faces at Denver next year after they've lost Massimo Rizzo and Shai Buium as well. A trio of CHL signings with NHL clubs as well. Carson Rakoff has signed with the Seattle Kraken, the Columbus Blue Jackets, inking Luca Pinelli, and Seattle has come to terms with defenseman Caden Price of the Kelowna Rockets. All my guests join me courtesy the Troubled Monk Hotline, and I've got 3 of them coming up for you this episode. Troubled Monk comes out of Red Deer, Alberta. It's available at any Alberta liquor store. It's craft beverages worth sharing, and we stress beverages because it's not just craft beer. In fact, if you go to their website at troubledmonk.com/shop and you click on the drop-down menu and you can sort all of their inventory, you can sort it by popularity, the first thing that comes up is not a beer. It's the Troubled Tea Original Hard Iced Tea. And I'll be honest, I've got 2 cases of that in my house right now. The 3 guests that you're going to hear from today on the Pipeline Show who did join me courtesy the Troubled Monk Hotline, Here's the order that we're going to hear from them as well. Brock Otten from McKean's Hockey joined me early in the week to preview the World U18. Yes, we are 2 days into the event now, but lots to talk about with Brock as we were getting set for the start of the tournament. Players that he is going to be focusing on in terms of the upcoming NHL draft. When he joined me, it had just been announced that Canada was adding 5 players to their roster. Hadn't yet officially announced TJ Ginla at that point. So it's a good setting of the table for the U18s if you're just going to start watching that tournament this weekend. From there, we're going to turn on the 2024 draft spotlight, a player who is eligible for the draft but still playing in the CHL playoffs. With all of the series wrapping up last weekend and the next round not starting until this weekend, except in the queue where one started on Thursday, it meant a lot of those players might have been available this week, and I thought perfect timing. Tarek Parasak from the Prince George Cougars joined me earlier in the week. I'll be able to share that with all you non-patrons. Now, patrons have had access to these 3 interviews since Monday or Tuesday of this week. It's one of those advantages of becoming a patron at patreon.com/thepipelineshow. And final segment this week will be with Stéphane Leroux from RDS. Here's a guy who's been covering the queue for 34 years. Longtime beat reporter, longtime broadcaster. He's actually going to be broadcasting the World U18 games for RDS. So if you happen to be tuning in and listening to the games in French, you're hearing Stéphane Leroux. Well, he joins me to preview the queue playoffs as we get to the conference finals there. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get right to it. Brock Otten from McKean's. He's up first. You're listening to The Pipeline Show, brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky.
Stutzler back to Sider, across to Bach. Dominic Bach, great pass in for Stutzler. Slides it back across, they score!
Hello, this is Tim Stutzler from Mannheim, and this is The Pipeline Show.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Gensel banks it towards the goal. He scores.
Kale McCarr.
He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious.
Visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
You're listening to The Pipeline Show with Guy Flaming.
I used to be able to throw a pigskin 4 miles.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Hey, it's The Pipeline Show with Guy Flaming, and we're going to look ahead to the World U18, which gets started officially on April 25th, so just a matter of days from when I'm speaking with you right now. A quick reminder, The Pipeline Show brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky. It's Alberta's best. You can get it in 3 Edmonton area locations, or if you're in Western Canada, that would be Winnipeg and West, or Manitoba and West. You can go to their website at wilhaukbeefjerky.com, and they'll ship it to you any order, any size, anywhere in Western Canada. All right, the World U18 will be in Finland, and to help me go through the tournament, who they're watching for, it would be Brock Otten from McKean's. Brock, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing terrific. I'm looking forward to this tournament. It's a little different feel for when your CHL team that you're close to is not in the playoffs and didn't make the playoffs. You got a lot of extra time on your hands, so I'm kind of looking forward to this one this year. How about for you?
Yeah, it gives you something to root for, right? Like when that team is out and you're really focused on the upcoming draft as well. And this tournament, it rarely disappoints. It's always a lot of fun.
Well, only one Oil King expected to be in the tournament this year. And I think it's going to be a fun tournament. And Canada's roster gets finalized, almost finalized. One more guy to add still. But as we're speaking here on Monday, they announced publicly that and officially that 5 more players have been added to the list. So they're up to 24 now. I have room for one more guy. It will be a forward. Brock, what do you make of Canada's roster?
Yeah, I think it's one of the best that this country has been able to ice at this event in recent years. Obviously, we're always at the mercy of what's going on in the CHL playoffs. And this year, we kind of lucked out in being able to get a lot of the top players available. I think that the CHL playoffs being, or the whole tournament, the CHL playoffs, everything kind of happening just that little bit later has allowed all of those playoffs to advance a little bit further than they normally do. So more players are available at the very beginning of the tournament. Typically, we've seen guys that be added after second rounds are over, halfway through the tournament, after the first couple of games. Don't really have to worry about that this year, which is great. I think these guys are going to be having a lot more opportunity to gel early on. It's only going to be better for Canada at this tournament. I think that this is a fantastic roster. And quite frankly, I think Canada's a team to beat. I think maybe even more so than the United States, who is typically the favorite at this event based on, you know, how their system works. But I really like Canada's roster.
Well, and unfortunately, with not just with the playoffs, but injuries this year, robbing us of having a couple of guys like Caden Lindstrom and Berkeley Catton involved in this tournament. But I'm with you. I still like Canada's roster. And the additions that Canada has made here with Max Massé and Muse and Morelli, both defensemen out of Ottawa, Ollie Josephson from Red Deer. They bring in the young goaltender who's not eligible until next season. I think those are nice additions for Canada as well. And I think we're kind of expecting T.J. Ginla eventually to join the team as well, depending on maybe there's an injury or something that he wasn't announced here today with the other five. But there's a lot of star power on this team and a lot of offense. I really like Canada's roster.
Yeah, I think that when you look at it in comparison to the other countries, I think Canada's got the best goaltending in the tournament. I don't even think that's up for debate. I think whether it's Carter George or whether it's Linders, I think you're getting the best goaltending in the tournament. I think that their forward group is among the best, if not the best and deepest in the tournament. I think the only thing that's questionable would be the defense. I think that it's not an amazing year for the 06 group defensively. When you look at some of the other guys available, like Carter Yakimchuk, obviously is not eligible for the tournament. Zane Parekh is going to be playing in the Memorial Cup, so he's not available. Sam Dickinson still playing with London. Mm-hmm. So some of the top defenders eligible for this draft or in this age group for Canada are not available. So that's where other guys are going to have to step up, right? A guy like Henry Muse is going to have to be a little bit better than he was at the Olympic Gretzky. Really interested to see how Harrison Rinicky plays coming off of the injury. He hasn't played in a while. And he's somebody that our scouts really, really like. McKean, somebody with a really excellent upside for the NHL level. So I'm really curious to see him at the event, especially, like I said, coming off that injury. I really want to see how Matthew Schaefer plays on the back end as an 07, probably Canada's best 07 defender and somebody who could be a top pick in next year's draft. From what I understand, he was probably Canada's best defenseman in the preseason or the pre-tournament game against Finland. So very promising. I think the back end is the one area that concerns me a little bit in comparison to some of the other teams in the tournament. But the fact that we have great goaltending, or we should have great goaltending, sort of alleviates those concerns to some degree for me.
Well, and I like the young guys on the team, some 07s and late 06s that are going to be stars. Like Gavin McKenna is going to be a stage for him to really shine, where he's going to be surrounded with a ton of other really skilled offensive players. I'm looking forward to seeing Roger McQueen here and Porter Martone as well. And Caleb DeNoyer has had a great season in the queue this year. So even the young guys on this year's U18 squad, they could be some of the leaders offensively of this club.
For sure. I think when you look at McKenna and Schaefer specifically, I think you're looking at two guys who are probably going to play a pretty big role for this team. And then you've obviously got guys like McQueen and Martone that are eligible next year. Yes, they're 06s, but they're late birthdays. I would expect both of them to be in the first two lines for Canada as well.
Now, the one advantage that the United States has is that chemistry, clearly. I mean, Canada is putting a roster together here basically 10 days before the tournament starts. The United States has guys who have been playing together for two straight years. And that's a huge advantage, isn't it, for the Americans?
Yeah, absolutely it is. This tournament, usually it's the United States is to win, right? That's their end goal. Like, this team is put together as U17 in the program with the end goal of winning U18 gold, right? Like, it's a two-year commitment to winning at the U18s at the IHF level. And obviously, when you're playing that long together and the coaching staff is together and everything is worked out yes, you're going to be one of the favorites, and that's no different this year. I think the one thing that concerns me with them is their goaltending. It's just not a great year for the program's goaltending. They brought in Caleb Heil to be part of that group from the USHL. He hasn't had an amazing year, and I don't know if he's going to be the answer. We saw that with their pre-tournament game against Sweden. I believe it was 8-5, right? An extremely high-scoring game. And I don't know if the U.S. is going to be able to outscore some of the better teams in that tournament, in this tournament, consistently, right? This is something that I think is a major concern. And I do like that they brought in Trevor Connolly. I think that if I had another criticism with this team, is that it's not quite as deep offensively as it typically is. And I think by bringing in Connolly, now you've shored up that middle six. There's no guarantee that, you know, he finds chemistry with somebody that quickly. But he's a high-skill guy that's definitely going to elevate that group and gives them secondary scoring beyond what they currently have. So I think that was the right call. I'm glad they did it. I'm really curious to see him play the tournament too.
I'm curious about that decision from not just USA Hockey's perspective. I understand why they would want a guy of Connolly's ability injected into their roster. I'm a little surprised Connolly went, leaves his team, who are in the playoffs. They definitely need him to advance in the playoffs. But he's kind of, he wants the exposure, he wants the showcase, and I understand that because it's a big event ahead of the draft. I'm of mixed opinion on him being there. I'm not sure that I like it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen the last couple of years is USHL teams allowing this to happen, right? It happened last year with Mackel and Celebrini. Teams in the USHL are showing that their players' development, and that's the most important thing for them, right? Yes, team success is great, and yes, they want to build towards winning championships just like CHL clubs do, but not at the expense of what's best for some of their players individually in their development. And I think that's why you're sort of seeing a lot of high-end Canadian players flock there, because they're seeing that these are teams that are putting my development first, what's best for me first, over everything else. And I think that's sort of a selling point for them in the USHL right now. And I think that the fact that they're allowing some of these players to go sort of speaks volumes to that philosophy.
When Celebrini went and Fantilli went the year before, I thought Chicago had a bye in the first round, so they weren't actually playing at the time, and that they'd be back in time for when their team started playing in the USHL playoffs. I thought there was a window that just kind of happened where they'd actually be able to go and be back in time without it impacting the Chicago Steel. I could be wrong. Am I off on
that? No, you're right. Yeah, I think there was just a small overlap because of that. But, I mean, it's still a risk you take, right? Like, it's not like – I'll give you an example. Let's say Saginaw had already lost and been upset. I don't think that they would let Michael Mezza and Zane Parekh go at the risk that they get injured. They're hosting the Memorial Cup, right? You know what I mean? There is that inherent risk built into it where that player could get injured and now is unavailable to you, right? So the fact that they're willing to take that risk, again, sort of speaks volumes to that player development first philosophy.
All right, good discussion. Who else on the American roster is circled on your roster sheet?
I think that, like I said, Trevor Connolly is that big one for me because I want to see how he fits in with that roster. Obviously, James Haggins, available next year, is the main guy that I really want to see. I think he's had a great year. I think he's one of the top prospects available next year. Cole Eiserman, obviously, there's going to be a lot of eyes on him. For lack of a better term, his stock does seem to be dropping quite a bit. I don't know if it's dropping in the eyes of NHL scouts as much as it is in sort of the amateur list. I think that there's still going to be value in what he brings to the table, but he's somebody that I think has a lot to gain, maybe not as much to lose at this tournament. I think if he has just an average tournament, people are still going to say, well, you know, Eiserman still has that potential as one of the best goal scoring forwards available in this draft. But let's say Cole Eiserman goes to this tournament, finishes as the leading goal scorer of the tournament, helps the U.S. win gold. You know, are we moving him back up the draft board? Is he now in that top six, top seven conversation again, like he was at the beginning of the year? I think that he is maybe the player that has the most to gain or lose at this tournament. I think the other one would be Aaron Kitty Harju, just because he hasn't played very much, right? Another guy that was highly hyped coming into the season, has had a really tough year with injuries, and now is going to have a chance to be the guy for Finland on the back end. So, yeah, Yzerman on the U.S. is somebody that I'm really interested to see, too.
All right, well, it sounds like you think the Americans and the Canadians should do very well. Who's next, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think that it really just depends on a few things. Obviously, number one, I think Finland has great high-end talent, but how that depth comes together is going to be really important. What kind of goaltending they get is going to be really important. Konsta Hallenius should be one of the best players in this tournament. You know, he was in contention for a spot on the men's championship roster, and I think the intention is that he goes and plays in that tournament after the U18s are over. He's had a remarkable playoffs at the Liga level. So, you know, he should come into this tournament and be one of the best players. And that's going to obviously elevate Finland, because you're not going to want to take a penalty against the Finns if he's running that top power play unit, right? Especially with Kitty Harju back there as well. So that's going to be a big one, I think, is Finland. I don't know if they have the depth. Sweden, it's not an amazing year for the Swedes at the draft. You know, I think the fact that they lost 8-5 to the U.S. in the pre-tournament game sort of speaks volumes to that a little bit. Yes, it's pre-tournament, but it's just not Sweden's best year. That said, they still have a lot of talent. They still got a really good defense, in my opinion, even though, yes, they gave up 8 goals to the Americans. But I'm really curious to see how Alphonse Frey and Leo Wallinius, Solon Wallinius plays. Not having one of their top players in 07 and Anton Fridell, due to injury, I think hurts them. I think, quite frankly, I think that he was one of their better forwards as an 07 and somebody that would have been on the first or second line. So that definitely hurts them. The Czechs should be solid. Outside of that, I don't know of anybody else. Slovakia is bringing a very, very young team. A lot of 07s, that group for them is a lot better than their 06s. The Swiss, Kazakhstan, Latvia, Norway are probably not going to do amazing. Switzerland obviously is always solid. They're always well coached. They always compete hard. They always push teams. I don't think that they've got the kind of talent to push for a medal this year, but they're always competitive, and that's great for round robin play, because the last thing you want to see, which I think we might see a little bit, maybe like say for Kazakhstan, are some of those 10-0, 12-0, you know, one-sided games, which are unfortunate. And I'm sure you can chime in on the debate that always happens around this tournament and around the U20s when those landslides happen. The debate always whether the tournaments should be restricted to less teams, what the best course of action is. Everybody has an opinion on that, it seems like. I think you're looking at Canada, USA as the two heavy favorites, and Finland, Sweden, and the Czechs as being sort of like that next tier down, but still having a chance.
I know the draft this year, the draft class in terms of goaltender depth, maybe kind of an average year for goalies. I don't know if you have a different take on that, but I'm wondering what the goalie crop from Europe is like, and if somebody will stand out in this event. Are Euro goalies available?
There are, but they're Russian. So obviously they won't be playing in this tournament. Outside of that, Sweden's probably going to go with an 07 in net, I would imagine, in Love Hornsom. He's kind of been the guy for them at this level as an underager. So I would imagine that he probably gets first crack at the net or is one of the guys they're looking at there. Finland has a few interesting options. But otherwise, like I said earlier, I think Canada has the two best goalies in the tournament by far, whether it's Carter George or whether it's Ryerson Leanders. And both of those guys, I think, have a very good chance of being among the best or the first goalies off the board this year. And people are going to get an opportunity to see them play in this tournament, just like they saw George play in the Hlinka in the summer when he was Canada's starter, which he stole away from Gabriel Daigle about halfway through that tournament.
If George and Leanders are the first two goaltenders taken in the draft, it kind of goes against the grain in terms of goalies who aren't 6 foot three. George is only listed at 6 foot and Leanders is 6'1". Are we getting away from sort of that stigma that if you're not 6'2", 6'3", or bigger, you're not making it in the NHL?
I don't think we're getting away from it. I think that some of the success we're seeing from smaller goalies like UC Saros, like Dustin Wolf and Devin Levi, played so well to start their pro career, I think it's changed the narrative a little bit, but I think scouts still prefer those bigger netminders. I think it just speaks volumes as to how good George is. I would expect him to be drafted ahead of Leanders. He's just a little bit bigger, a little more technically sound than Leanders. Leanders is a better athlete, but doesn't have the technical components dialed in the way that Carter George does currently. Hmm. Other than that, when you look at like NHL Central Scouting's list, yeah, there's a lot of 6'4", a lot of 6'3" guys. Their top rated guy is Mikhail Yudorov playing in Omaha, the USHL. He's somebody that, has that size, athleticism package that scouts are looking for in goalies these days, right? And I think a perfect example is somebody that you're familiar with in the WHL, and Lucas Mateka, who's a reentry. He's in his second year of eligibility, and he didn't have a very good second half. But, NHL Central Scouting still had him third, I believe, in North America, because the upside is there because of that size athleticism package, right? There's going to be a bias towards those smaller goalies. You just have to be so much better than everybody else. And I do think Carter George, is that guy. And I think people are going to see that at this tournament.
Brock, we kind of glossed over the Czech Republic team or the Czechia's team. Anybody from that roster that stands out from the crowd for you that you're going to be keying on in this event? Or maybe it's like, I don't know where to rank them right now, so this event is going to really answer some questions for me, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm going to give you two. The one is the guy you alluded to earlier when you said that the Edmonton Oil Kings are going to have one player at the tournament, and that's Adam Yeko. He's somebody that injuries have kind of hampered him a little bit this year. He's been kind of inconsistent. Our scouts and the Keens have been kind of up and down on him, but he's somebody that I really want to see play at this event. I really want to see do well because he's one of those guys that has those physical intangibles, right? But you want to see, what's the upside here? How is it all going to come together in the future? And I think that he has a great opportunity to play a starring role on this Czech team. And it's going to be interesting to see how he responds. And the other guy I'm going to give you is an underager, Adam Benak, who is probably one of the more skilled 07s on the planet right now. And he's somebody that I think has a chance to go quite high in his draft year. And he's been one of the better players in his age group, even though he's playing up for the Czechs. So he's somebody that I really want to see play as well.
Excellent. What else you got coming out for McKean's here between over, I guess, the next couple of weeks? We still got a couple of months, 2-3 months before the draft itself. So lots to go. But on the immediate horizon, what do you guys have coming out?
Yeah, we're going to do a preview for the tournament. That should be coming out in the next day or two. Each division will be previewed with some guys to watch. And then we'll have a review of the tournament as well, just on some of the guys who had really good tournaments who I think have increased or improved their stock. It's tough always how much stock you actually put into a single tournament and the performance in that tournament. Yeah. But I think without question, if you have a good U18s, it can go a long way as to helping your stock. So we'll have something on that. We also have our annual prospect guide coming out in the next, I'm going to say in the next 3 weeks or so, roughly. That's sort of our ranking and guide of all the prospects in the NHL currently. So not just draft focus. We're talking about the equivalent to the Hockey News' Future Watch that we would put out. It has a top 200 prospect ranking. It has breakdowns of every team. So that'll be coming out in the next 3 weeks or so. That's an annual guide for us. And then obviously, like you said, gearing up for the release of the draft guide, which will be aiming for the beginning of June.
Before I let you go, quick thoughts on the CHL playoffs. We're down to four teams in all three leagues. They all get going this weekend in the various semifinals. Are these the 12 teams that you expected would be where they are?
Well, we've still got one OHL series to go, actually.
Yeah, you're right.
You and I speak. Saginaw and the Sioux are going to a game seven, which is great because, let's be real, with the way that teams have stockpiled assets in the last, we'll call it last half decade post-COVID, I feel like we're just not getting the kind of quality early on in these series that, you know, we used to maybe, you know, 10, 12 years ago where there were upsets. We just don't see it really anymore, right? So the fact that that series has been so good and now is going to a game seven is great. And these are two fantastic teams. It's going to be interesting. I feel like hosting the Memorial Cup has been a bit of a kiss of death for teams lately in early exits. So we'll see if Saginaw is able to pull this out and get by the Sioux.
Rock, this has been terrific. As always, really appreciate your time. We will, I'm sure I'll be reaching out to you again here probably around Memorial Cup time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime, man.
That was a good friend of the Pipeline Show. That is Brock Otten. He's been a guest on this program for well over a decade now, and always appreciate when he makes time to come on the show. Good look ahead at what to expect and who to watch at the U18 Men's World Hockey Championship, which begins on Wednesday, April 25th. So there's a good chance you're hearing this, and that tournament has already started. Brock and I had that conversation on Monday, and that's why we're still, as I'm recording right now, expecting one more player to be named to Canada's roster. And quite honestly, I would be surprised if it's anyone other than TJ Gintla, unless there's an injury that we're not aware of. I know some people thought Michael Hage would be involved. I was told that Hockey Canada was not looking outside of the CHL. Dean Letourneau was another candidate, although he got hurt at the end of the year. So not available anyway due to injury. He was supposed to actually play in the USHL. Brock's the one who told me about that. He played a couple of games around Christmas, I believe, for Sioux Falls and was supposed to be available for their playoffs. But because of the injury, that didn't happen either. So a tough situation for Letourneau. I'm sure there are a lot of scouts who would have really liked to see him, not just in the USHL playoffs, but potentially at the World U18. And I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but I don't like that Trevor Connolly is playing over there instead of playing for his team in their playoffs. I don't know, maybe that makes me a hypocrite, but I, like I said with Brock, when Fantilli went, he was back in time for the first, maybe he missed a game of the series, but was available to play. And was it Jaden Perron as well? Went over and played for Canada, but was available for Chicago. By the time that tournament wrapped up, he was back and playing. Not the case here for Trevor Connolly. And I wonder if some scouts will look at that and say, there's a guy who's putting himself ahead of the team, and that might reflect badly on him. I'm not sure. But I get it. I think from his perspective, considering some of the stuff that's been in the news for Trevor Connolly this year, probably wants to make a positive impression on the ice representing the United States at a big showcase event like this, and hope that if he does, that kind of overrules some of those stories. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google Trevor Connolly and maybe the word swastika. Next up on the program, we're going to turn on the 2024 draft spotlight and get to know another player who is eligible for the upcoming draft, like Connolly is and like most of the players at the World U18. This guy would be there, but not available because the Prince George Cougars are in the playoffs in the WHL. Tarek Parasak is his name. What an outstanding rookie season he had. 105 points as a rookie. Let's get to know him next. You're listening to The Pipeline Show, brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky.
Back to the blue line, Wilm in the middle, broken up by Zimmer. Look out, Cohen Zimmer, breakaway to Hyde to Zimmer. Hat trick! Cohen Zimmer, 3-1!
This is Cohen Zimmer with Prince George Cougars, and this is The Pipeline Show.
The Oil
Kings are Edmonton's first choice for family fun.
Your Edmonton Old Kings are back in the thick of it, taking the WHL by storm. And you can be right there cheering them on.
Great family entertainment starts at just $20 a seat, or never miss a game with season seats as low as $9 per game.
Thrilling Western Hockey League action, amazing theme nights, and special price kids' food combos at every home game for $10 or less.
The entertainment value is king-sized.
Secure your seat for the next action-packed, exciting Oil Kings home game today at oilkings.ca.
You're listening to The Pipeline Show with Guy Flaming.
It's the cheapest drug there is.
Back on The Pipeline Show with Guy Flaming, we are going to turn on the 2024 draft spotlight and get to know another player who is eligible for the upcoming NHL draft. We'll get to that in a second. A quick reminder that Wilhauk Beef Jerky, it's Alberta's best. You can get it in three Edmonton area locations, or you can go to their website at wilhaukbeefjerky.com, W-I-L-H-A-U-K, beefjerky.com, and have it shipped to you anywhere in Western Canada. And your taste buds will thank me for it. Let them know The Pipeline Show sent you. All right, we are heading up to Prince George. Exciting times for the Cougars as, man, they are on a heck of a run right now. But the conference finals get going this weekend, and a tough test against the Portland Winterhawks. But Tarek Parasak is my guest right now. Tarek, welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm doing well.
I mean, exciting up there right now. I mean, the crowds at your rink have been outstanding. This team it's a juggernaut, but you're running up against an equally tough team this weekend. I think for a lot of people, things get serious here in the conference finals on both the East and the West side. But maybe what's just the mood of the team right now?
Yeah, obviously we've had a lot of success this year, so we're all pretty excited in the room, and we're excited to keep going here. We know Portland's definitely going to be a tough team to go against here, and yeah, we're excited for the challenge, and yeah, we're just an excited group to get going here.
How many times did you play against the Winterhawks this year, and who had the bragging rights?
We played them four times this year, and we split 2-2.
Well, that's perfect, isn't it? I mean, going up against the Winterhawks at this late stage of the playoffs, they're a team that's won it before. This is brand new for the Cougars. This is really exciting. I imagine the whole community is wrapped up in this right now.
Yeah, it's been awesome to see kind of the community kind of rally behind us, and especially the support we get at games, and just all over the community, you can kind of feel the energy and the support we have from them. So it's been pretty special.
When you look at the standings and you see that you finished 1 point ahead of Portland, and that earns you home ice advantage, it really makes you wonder, like, you go back to a game in November that was kind of a nothing game at that time. Every game is absolutely a factor in determining home ice advantage and how crucial that could actually become in a series like this, couldn't it?
Yeah, obviously home ice advantage is huge in the playoffs, especially kind of with the travel that we have up here in PG. It's very important, and we were lucky enough to get that 1 point advantage over them and clinch home ice.
You mentioned the travel. Is this an advantage for the Cougars? Because you're kind of used to it. You do it all season long. I don't know, actually. Are you guys bussing to and from Portland, or are you flying?
Yeah, we're bussing. So I think that's something we're kind of definitely used to. Maybe not this long of a trip, but yeah, it's something we're used to. And I don't think they're the team that's used to this long of a travel either. So it'll be hopefully an advantage for us here.
Yeah, the most northern team in the conference against the most southern-based team in the conference. Lots of travel ahead for the next little bit. Tarek, tell me about the playoffs thus far for your club and for yourself personally. Outside of the wins and losses, I think the way you guys are playing the game right now has to fill you with a lot of confidence that if you play your game, good things are going to happen.
Yeah, obviously we've had pretty good success so far. I think the one loss against Kelowna there, that was definitely something that was a game we wish we could have got back there. So there's definitely things we see in our game we can work on and improve on for the following games to come. But yeah, we're pretty happy with where we're at right now.
Is a loss like that kind of a good thing in some way, just to kind of, it's a bit of a reminder, a kick in the pants that you can't take a night off?
Yeah, I think for us too, we were on a 26 game point streak there with collecting a point in every game. So it was kind of the first little shock in a while for us of kind of not getting that winning taste. But yeah, definitely going to face adversity in the playoffs, especially if you're trying to go on a long run. So yeah, it's a good thing and kind of a bit of a wake up call. And yeah, it's nice to have that adversity now.
Tarek Parasak, my guest, a forward with the Prince George Cougars, coming off a 105-point rookie season. Now, should stress that it's not like you're a 16-year-old coming into the league, but It's your first year, 43 goals and 62 assists in that 105 points. It's an unbelievable season. You got to be really proud of the way you've played. Be honest, a little surprised at the production, or were you kind of expecting that you'd be able to put up some big numbers?
Yeah, I kind of get this question a lot. I think for me, it's not. I don't think I was expecting quite the production level. I didn't really know too much of what to expect coming in as a rookie this year, not knowing quite what the team would look like and how it'd be structured. But I was thankful enough to get some opportunity early on in the year and kind of ran with that. So I think my expectations definitely changed throughout the course of the year for myself. So yeah, it was a super exciting year for myself and our group too.
It took off right from the beginning. I mean, you were one of the top scorers, might have been, if I remember correctly, the leading scorer in the league for like the first month of the year or something like that. So it seemed like it was coming really easy. And for a lot of people, it was like, where did this guy come from? He's coming out of the blue. Fourth round pick. We'll get to that in a little while later. But a lot of guys would tell me it's, you know, credit the teammates that you have and the line mates that you have. Did you play with the same two guys for the most part all season, or did that change up a lot?
Yeah, thankful enough to have those guys to play with. We have such a good team here, so playing with anybody, it's really been easy all year. Yeah, I think we've mixed up our lines quite a bit throughout the year. I got the opportunity to play with a lot of different guys, but for a lot of the season, I was with Becker and Funk, and then kind of later on, I started playing with Height a lot more. So I mean, no matter who I'm playing with, they're good players. So yeah, it's been great all year, and yeah, it's nice to play with different guys too all the time.
Now, some people will look at that and say, oh, he's playing with some stars. He's riding their coattails or something like that. You're benefiting from your line mates. Do you take offense to that? Or are you more of like, yeah, our team is pretty good and I'm a contributor to that. I'm not just feeding off somebody else.
Yeah, I think, I mean, playing with those guys, it's obviously super special. So there's no denying that they help my game. And I think obviously I think I help them out too in other ways. So I think it's kind of found good chemistry with a lot of teammates and line combinations this year. So I think we all kind of feed off of each other, but yeah, they definitely help me out. There's no question about that, but I think I definitely bring my own aspects to the line or that way to be able to produce for the line as well.
Well said. Tarek, the Pipeline Show is a junior in college hockey show, so my regular audience will be up to speed on what's happening in the playoffs. They'll know about you already, but there'll be a lot of casual NHL fans who will listen to a segment like this simply because you're draft eligible this year, and a lot of NHL fans don't care about junior hockey at all. So for the benefit of that portion of the audience who don't know anything about you, let's go back a little bit and right to the beginning and get some background. Where are you from? What do you consider to be your hometown?
Yeah, so I was born in Lethbridge, and I was in Lethbridge for, I think, until about high school, where I then moved up to Calgary to go to the Edge school there. So I've kind of been between Lethbridge and Calgary for pretty much most of my life. So kind of Southern Alberta area. And yeah.
When did you start playing and who got you into hockey at a young age?
I think I started playing when I was five. My dad played college hockey at Canisius. So right. He kind of got me into hockey there. So I think my dad was definitely the main drive for my hockey.
Have you always been a forward, Tarek, or did you try other positions as a kid growing up?
I've always been a forward, always kind of loved to score goals, and that was kind of a big reason of why I played, just the excitement of scoring a goal. So I've always kind of been a forward.
A lot of guys I talk with say that maybe when they're, I don't know, six or seven, their minor hockey team didn't have a full-time goaltender, so everyone was expected to kind of take a turn and play a game in net. Did you have a night like that?
Yeah, I think my first 2 years of hockey, when it's kind of nothing's like set in stone, just kind of just letting the little kids out there to have fun. Definitely got a couple reps in as a goalie, a couple games. So that was obviously a fun time being a kid. I think everybody kind of enjoys being goalie for a little bit, but definitely wasn't my thing.
Take me back to the Bantam draft. That would have been in 2021. And I'm trying to remember, I think that was the COVID year. So was that a December draft instead of one in early May, like normal? It was December, wasn't it, that year?
Yeah, it was the December one.
All right, for you, fourth round pick by the Prince George Cougars, 78th overall that year. And because it was in December, were you at the academy at Edge School, or were you at home? What was draft day like?
Yeah, so I was at the Edge School there, and it was kind of a midweek thing. So there's a lot of guys in the school who are hoping to get drafted. So we're all kind of, during classes, we're all kind of watching the draft and kind of going through it that whole day.
right before you were picked, did you have any idea or expectations coming into that day where about you might be drafted or who might draft you?
Yeah, I really didn't have a clue of who was going to pick me or where I kind of would go. I kind of knew there was a little bit of an area of where I thought that I might fall into, and I ended up kind of falling into the area I thought. But I didn't really know what team to expect to kind of pick me. Was never really told the team was like set in stone line to pick me at a certain spot. So it was kind of all random on draft day.
Well, with 22 teams in the league, unless it's the Lethbridge Hurricanes that draft you, and I guess maybe Calgary since you were already there, you know that you're going to be moving away from home at a fairly young age. Once it's Prince George that picks you, what's your initial thought to that?
Yeah, I was obviously super excited to get drafted. And I mean, that's the whole goal, is to just get picked. And at that point, I didn't know much about Prince George. I didn't really understand the travel for sure. I didn't know it was that far away from everything else. But yeah, I think just initially, just so much excitement to get picked and hopefully have that opportunity to play in a WHL.
Eventually, do you get used to the travel, or do you like every time you get on the bus? I mean, the nearest town to you from a WHL perspective is Kamloops. What's that, like 6 hours? I mean, that's the shortest road trip you have. And I mean, I don't know if there are teams in the OHL that have a six-hour trip, period.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something you get used to after a while. I think getting to the end of the first year here, it's definitely gotten used to the travel. And yeah, you go on these super long trips, like what we're going to go on here to Portland, and then you go to a Kamloops or Kelowna, and they feel super short. And they're still 6-8 hours away, so you definitely get used to it, but it's still definitely a long time on a bus.
Do you guys have a sleeper bus? By that, I mean like a lot of bunk beds and stuff like that, or is it still normal seats?
Yeah, still normal seats.
Wow, that's got to be tough for those long bus rides. Tarek Parasak is my guest forward with the Prince George Cougars. If you can kind of go look over your last maybe one or two seasons, how have you evolved as a player? The growth in your game, what areas of your game has sort of evolved here the most?
Yeah, I think for me, definitely, I grew a lot in the last couple of years. So I think that helped out my game a lot, just kind of hitting puberty kind of area and just kind of being able to get a lot stronger and a little bit bigger. So that's definitely a big factor. And then I think my skating has been a big focus of kind of something I need to improve on the last couple of years, and still something I want to work on, but I think that's probably the biggest area of improvement for me.
With 43 goals and 62 assists, do you see yourself more as a shooter or a playmaker? Because evidently you can do both.
Yeah, I think for me it's a little bit of both. I think if I can get open into passing lanes and make room for myself to be able to finish opportunities, but I think I'm also pretty good at making room for my teammates and feeding them the puck. So I think I'm kind of a little bit equally between those two.
The sheet I'm looking at lists you at 5'11 and 180 pounds. I don't know if that was at the start of the year or if that's right up to date. What are you at right now?
Yeah, pretty close to that. I think about 5'11 and a half, almost 6 foot now. So, and then, yeah, the weight's kind of stayed around the same, the 170 to 180 range, and definitely fluctuates a bit throughout the year, but that's about where I'm at right now.
Now, you don't turn 18 until the end of May, so do you think you've topped out height-wise? Or the way you described it, it's like you're still growing a little bit upwards.
Yeah, hopefully I can maybe grow a little bit more, maybe half an inch or an inch or so. But yeah, we'll just have to see what happens here the next little while, but hopefully you can grow a little bit more.
Now, you mentioned your dad played college hockey at Canisius. Was that a consideration for you at all? Not necessarily playing for Canisius, but going the NCAA route. Was that something that you had considered? I think a lot of people would wonder why you didn't play in the dub last year. Did that have anything to do with it?
Yeah, I think my dad definitely pushed me to look the other way a little bit too, just especially being a fourth round pick, you don't know, and PG had lots of picks during the time, so you didn't really know where I would fit in on the depth chart. So definitely weighed my options and looked both ways and considered that, but ultimately for me it was, I always wanted to play in the WHL growing up in Lethbridge, so when I finally was able to have that opportunity to play in Prince George, it was just kind of a dream come true to have that opportunity.
Nice. How often do you think about the draft? I know you got a lot on your mind right now, but during the course of the regular season, were you looking ahead, or is that sort of a trap that you mentally that you want to avoid and not get distracted by it?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously super hard to kind of stay away from that all and not really see anything online. But I think
for me, just kind of getting used to that throughout the year of, I know I'm going to see it and just have to kind of take everything I see with a grain of salt and not really worry about it too much and try and just focus on myself and the team and what our goals are as a group. And yeah, just kind of take it all and see it, but not think too much about it.
I know some guys will tell me they'll Google themselves during the course of the year. They want to use that as motivation to see who's saying what about them, where they're ranked. Doesn't sound like that's necessarily what you do, but you know, at the start of the year, I think it's fair to say you weren't on the radar for a lot of people, and now at the end of the year, most people seem to have you as a first-round pick. That's got to be flattering, but you try not to pay too much attention to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously super hard to not look that kind of stuff up, and you see it everywhere, so it's definitely take your looks at it, and it's hard not to look, but I mean, can't worry too much about that stuff. I mean, a lot of it has nothing to do. It's more what the teams seeing you and what the teams want. So sure. it all matters to a certain extent, but I think ultimately it's all what I do with my team here.
Southern Alberta guy. I don't want to assume the Flames were your team growing up as a kid. Did you cheer for anyone in particular?
Yeah, I would say the Flames, just kind of being around the area. It's definitely a main pick of a lot of kids at a young age in Lethbridge area and especially Calgary. So yeah, I would say the Flames were definitely my team growing up.
Derek, in the off season, what do you like to do? It can't be hockey 12 months of the year, can it? So when you're away from the game, you're not working out with the intention of the next season, what do you do just to unwind and relax?
Yeah, I mean, summertime, when that comes around, I think hockey's obviously still on my mind. I love the game and I have a big passion for it. So I'm definitely doing lots of hockey, especially in the off season. But yeah, just kind of wind down a little bit. Sometimes just like hanging out with friends and family, just kind of doing whatever, golf a little bit in the summertime as well. So just little things, just kind of spending time with people I'm not usually around.
Well, a lot of hockey players will say golf, and whenever they do, I have to ask them what their favorite course is to play. It doesn't have to be one that's world famous, just somewhere you're comfortable going out and playing a round or two. Some nice courses down in Lethbridge.
Yeah, I think in Lethbridge I golf at Henderson Lake a little bit, so that's probably the one I do in Lethbridge. And then in Calgary, golfed at the Mickelson course there, which is super cool course, super nice there. So that's probably my favorite one I've golfed at.
Excellent. Well, Tarek, the conference final gets going this weekend. Best of luck to you and the Cougars and whatever happens at the NHL draft. I know that's the back of your mind right now, but good luck along the way the next couple of months, and hopefully we'll have a chance to chat again. Thanks for doing this.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
Here's Tarek Parasak of the Prince George Cougars. Man, what an amazing rookie season that he had this year. 105 points for the Cougars. That's an incredible rookie season. Make no bones about it. And yes, I did mention that, you know, he didn't come in as a 16-year-old, but take nothing away from him. I've seen it said, or I've heard it said, that Parasak's numbers are just inflated because of who he's playing with. But I've said it before. I think it's a skill to be able to play with talented players. It's not like he's a backboard standing in front of the net and Riley Height is banking goals in off of him, or Zach Funk or Cohen Ziemer. They have a lot of talented players, but he's one of them. That's why the Cougars are the top seed in the WHL's Western Conference. So he is not just picking up scraps from his teammates. He's one of the reasons why that team is so strong. Really looking forward to the WHL playoffs here as we get to the conference finals. They're both pick-ems to me. Portland and Prince George separated by 1 point. Are you kidding? And then Saskatoon and the Moose Jaw Warriors. A lot of people were thinking Swift Current would be the team that Saskatoon would have to face in the conference final. And Moose Jaw, after getting pounded and maybe a little embarrassed in the first game, 7-2, came back one game two by the same 7-2 score and then rattled off three more consecutive. Pretty impressive the way the Warriors took out the Swift Current Broncos. So, who do you favor in that series between the Blades and the Warriors? I mean, Saskatoon's been the top team pretty much all season. They will have home ice advantage, so you kind of have to give them the edge right now, don't you? Or at least favor them in the series, but I don't know that anybody is going to be shocked to see Moose Jaw have success. That is a very good team. It's going to be a great series. Both of them are going to be fantastic, and they both get going on Friday night. Got one more guest to get to this week, and we're going to head out to the queue and preview the semifinals in that league with the help of veteran broadcaster and reporter Stéphane Leroux. He's with RDS, 34 years of experience, and he is making his Pipeline Show debut next. You're listening to The Pipeline Show, brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky.
Down there by Zaboral. Puck comes free. Ward's clearing play to the line. It skips out to center. Valeno trying to break shorthanded. Joe Valeno, penalty coming. Valeno deking, scores! Joe Valeno, shorthanded goal!
Hey, it's Joe Valeno from the Drummondville Voltigeurs, and you're listening to The Pipeline Show.
Since 1965, Wilhauk Beef Jerky has provided fresh, top-quality beef jerky made with 100% Alberta beef. From your very first bite, you'll understand that real jerky isn't found at the convenience store. It's tender, full of flavor, with just a hint of subtle spices. Wilhauk's jerky is aged, seasoned, and marinated to lock in the flavors, and then smoked to perfection. Wilhauk Beef Jerky. It might just be the best you've ever tasted. Try for yourself. Search WILHAUK today.
You're listening to The Pipeline Show with Guy Flaming.
I know that, dude.
Hey, last segment to go on this week's episode of The Pipeline Show. We are going to look ahead to the third round, the semifinals in the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League. I'm still getting used to that name change. Maybe my next guest might be struggling with that too every once in a while. Stefan LaRue from RDS, welcome to the Pipeline Show, sir. How are you?
I'm very good, Guy, and I can confirm you, I am struggling big time because for 34 years, you called that the Quebec Junior, the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and now you have to switch the name.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to get used to.
I'm still getting used to it, but you've been covering that league for, like you said, 34 years. That is a very long time. What was the response with the name change for most of the people? I mean, you're in Quebec, so maybe people in Quebec felt different about it than the people in the Maritime.
Yeah, we were surprised a bit in December 14. I think it was in the middle of the World Junior Canada training camp that the new commissioner came with that news right in the afternoon, say, hey, we're going to change the name of the league. Say, what's going on? Why now? And why was it so urgent to do this? And for him, for the new commissioner, Mario Cecchini, he was named last year. It was important to recognize the Maritime fans. Of course, we have six franchises of the former Quebec Major Junior Hockey League based in the Maritime. So for him, it was important to recognize them. But I don't know. I think we're going to be used to, but it's still a brand. You know, the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, it's the league that saw Guy Lafleur, that saw Mario Lemieux, Pat LaFontaine. And the people in the Maritimes, when we started to go there back in 94 when Halifax came in, they wanted the name to keep the Quebec Junior Hockey League because for them it was important to be part of that Quebec History League. And now we changed the name. To be honest, personally, I didn't really like that. But I think we're getting used to, and it's going to be okay. For the English-speaking people in Quebec or in the Maritime, it's still the Q. So it doesn't really change the way they call the name. But for us in Quebec here, I would say it was mixed feelings, to be honest.
Well, I understand that for sure from both sides. I get it. 10 years from now, maybe we'll all be used to it and it won't be a big deal. But
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we are into the semifinal and two really good series, at least on paper. Baie-Comeau will play against Cape Breton and Drummondville against Victoriaville. We were talking about it off the air. The travel distance between these two series, completely different. Cape Breton just flew into Baie-Comeau. I think it was supposed to be about a 12.5-hour drive if they had driven, including a ferry across the St. Lawrence, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
So they fly instead, and yet Drummondville and Victoriaville are 45 minutes apart. It's a big difference.
Yeah, it's a big difference. You look to Cape Breton, Baie-Comeau, but Cape Breton is the farthest team east of the Maritimes, of course. They are their closest team during the regular season. It's Halifax with like 4 hours and 30 minutes of driving. So they're far from all the other teams. I mean, the Cape Breton never won the Quebec President's Cup that we're now calling the Gilles Courteau Trophy. And it's maybe because of that. They're a bit like Prince George in the Western Hockey League. I mean, they're far from everywhere. And Baie-Comeau, you know, they're not that far from Chicoutimi or from Quebec for 3 hours, 4 hours. But they still have the ferry, as you mentioned, because the when every time they're going to play in the Maritimes, they have to take that ferry, and the ferry schedules are not really easy sometimes. So they don't have the choice to fly, especially because in the semifinal and in the big final, we don't accept in the rules of the Quebec Junior Hockey League the 2-3-2 format. So it has to be two games in Baie-Comeau, two in Cape Breton, and then one in Baie-Comeau and one in Cape Breton. And if it goes to seven, we're going to come back to Baie-Comeau for the game seven. It's part of the rules. We don't want the 2-3-2. The first two rounds, it's okay. If there's more than 600 kilometers between the two rivals, they're going to do the 2-3-2 system, but not in the semifinal and in the final. And as you mentioned, the other series, well, it's the big rivalry from the Quebec Centre region, Drummondville and Victoriaville. This is the first time ever that they're going to meet in the semifinal. They did the only time they did the semifinal in the same year was back in 2010, but they weren't playing against each other. I mean, Drummondville was playing St. John and Victoriaville was playing Moncton. And they both were beaten, so they never faced in the semifinal or in the final. But it's a big rivalry, of course. It's like 58 kilometers apart. So games at 7, they're going to leave at 4 and going to be ready to play the game right away. So they can't even put their skates in the bus before going, and they're going to be ready to play when they're going to be there. It's really, really close. And the fans from both cities are really excited to have that matchup in the semifinal.
Well, that'd be great because they can go to both cities. The fans of each team can travel to the other city. Unless the fans of that local team buy all of the tickets, I suppose. There's that.
Yeah, well, they keep 200 tickets for both other team, but that's it. So you can't really buy some tickets right now in those two cities because it's already sold out in Victoriaville and in Drummondville too.
Okay. Let's start with the Drakkar and the Eagles. Everyone has been looking up in the standings at the Drakkar all season. They've been the number one team, not just in the Q, but in the CHL for much of the year. Do you give the Eagles a chance in this series, or are the Drakkar just too good?
Well, the Baie-Comeau team is really, really good. They have a lot of depth. But if you look back, if you look at the standings, you see 29 points that separate both teams in the regular season. But I think you just have to throw that in the garbage because since the month of March, Cape Breton is probably the hottest team in the league. They're 17-1 in their last 18 games. Wow. They finished the season with 9 straight wins, and they won the first two series in 9 games, 8-1. So 17-1 in the last 18 games. And they have a powerful duo right now that is scoring a lot of goals, just as it is in Baie-Comeau. In Cape Breton, you have Jacob Newcomb and Cam Squires. And in Baie-Comeau, you have Justin Poirier and Justin Gill. And those two players for their own team are really, really hot right now. You look at Poirier and Gill in Baie-Comeau, they scored 15 of the first 37 goals that the Drakkar scored in the playoffs. And you look at Newcomb and Squires in Cape Breton, they also scored 15 in the first 42 goals that the Eagles scored in the playoffs. So they're both responsible for the lot of what you can bring as the power of the attack of both teams. You look in the Nets, the two goalies are really hot right now, Nicolas Ruccia and Charles-Édouard Gravel in Baie-Comeau. So it's pretty equal, but I think the depth is a bit more, it's better in Baie-Comeau. The third line, the fourth line are probably better in Baie-Comeau right now. So it won't be easy, but my prediction is Baie-Comeau is going to win that one. But I'm sure in Cape Breton, they don't feel the same way. They've never been in the final since they entered in the league back in 1997, and they've never been in the final of the Q League. Baie-Comeau went in the final two times in 2013 and 14, and they both times they lost the final. 2013 against Halifax with Nathan MacKinnon. And 2014 against Val-d'Or and Anthony Mata. So they think that this is their year. This is the best year that the franchise had since they came in the league back in 97 too. The same year that they came with the Cape Breton. There was an expansion in Baie-Comeau and a transfer in Cape Breton. So those two teams are... They were a bit brothers in the league as far as the year that they came in.
Right.
So they're going to face in the semifinal. I think it's going to be a good series, but I think Baie-Comeau is going to win it.
Okay, and you expect it could be a long series then if you think it's that close?
Yeah, probably 6 games, something like that. Baie-Comeau are 8-0 right now since the start of the playoff, but they play Batters and they play Charlottetown, so they're both of those two teams were not really powerful this year. Even if Pathers beat Halifax in the first round, which was the big surprise here in the queue, now they're going to face a really good team, well coached by Louis Robitaille. Louis Robitaille was coaching the Gatineau Olympics last year. This is his first year in Cape Breton. He went to the Final Four last year, lost in the semifinal against the Quebec Ramparts. Mm-hmm. But he had a good team last year in Gatineau too. So in his rookie season with the Cape Breton, I'm sure he wants to be the first coach that bring the franchise in the final. But Baie-Comeau's really, really strong.
Well, lots on the line for both of these teams. I love that neither one has won the league title before, and one of them is going to get the chance to actually get to the final this year. That's awesome. Stéphane Leroux from RDS, my guest here on the Pipeline Show, looking ahead to the playoffs in the queue starting this weekend. We get to the semifinals. The other series is a good one. As you described, arch rivals, Drummondville against Victoriaville, separated by less than an hour. Ethan Gauthier, the leading scorer in the playoffs right now, but Max Pellerin right behind him with Victoriaville. How do you size up this matchup?
Well, I think it's going to be a goalie affair. We have a goalie in Victoriaville, Nathan Darvo, won the CHL Goalie of the Year title last year. He's not big, only 5'8", but he's really, really good. And on the other side, Riley Mercer, the brother of Dawson Mercer of the New Jersey Devils. Sometimes, you know, he can be really hot, but sometimes he's getting really cold. So that could be the difference in that series. I still think Drummondville has a better team than Victoriaville. But it's not really, really a big difference. Drummondville lost Maverick Lamoureux, a first-round pick from the Arizona Coyotes. Well, I should say the Utah Coyotes now. But he was injured at the start of the playoff, and we said, well, for the first two rounds, it's going to be okay. But when we're going to be in the semifinal and the final, Lamoureux's absence is going to probably be tough for Drummondville. But they have a solid group of defensemen led by Sivalod Komarov. He was playing for the Quebec Ramparts last year. Now he's a Drummondville player. He's probably the best defenseman in the Quebec Junior Hockey League this year. You look at the Ethan Gauthier you mentioned. He's really, really hot right now. Maxime Pellerin, on the other side, he's the captain of the Victoriaville Tigers, and he's the son of the majority owner of the Victoriaville Tigers. So this is his last year. He's a 20-year-old guy, and he wants to win this year, of course. And Victoriaville won the title back in 2021. Remember that year when the Quebec Junior League was the only one that playing during the COVID?
Right.
Victoriaville won the cup that year, but they didn't play in front of their crowd in Victoriaville. They had to play it in the bubble in Quebec, and it was not the same. Of course, they hoist the cup, but it was not the same. So this year they want to bring back the team in the final to be able to play in front of their fans in Victoriaville. This is going to be a long one. During the season, Drummondville won 4 of the 6 matchups that they played against each other. This is the first time they meet in semifinal. They face 7 times during the series back in the last 30 years, and Drummondville won 4, Victoriaville won 3. Hmm. I think Drummondville's going to win it, but I won't bet my house on that one. But I favor Drummondville in my predictions, so for me, it's going to be Drummondville Baie-Comeau in the final, but it's going to be close, especially the Drummondville Victoriaville series.
If, in fact, it does work out that way and it is Drummondville and Baie-Comeau in the final, again, Baie-Comeau would have to be the favorite in that series, despite Drummondville is very good. But again, Baie-Comeau with that depth, are they just too good this year?
I think so. I think this is their year. And if they don't win the title this year, I don't know when they want to win, because.
Right.
At the start of the season, we didn't expect they will be that good. I mean, I was reading the predictions of almost all the reporters in Quebec at the start of season. Everybody was putting Baie-Comeau first in their division, but maybe not as good as they were. I mean, they were something like I think at Christmas time they were 33-3 or something like that. They were really, really surprising, and they made some trades during Christmas time because, of course, they saw the opportunity of going all the way this year. So they have guys on the third line that could be on the second or first line from other teams. And the fun part is they don't have a lot of draft guys. They only have 2 guys that were drafted in the NHL. Justin Gill was a draftee from the Vancouver Canucks. Mm-hmm. And they added during Christmas time Angus Booth from Shawinigan. He's a draft player too. But for all the other ones, they're still young. They have a lot of 17 years old that plays really good. You must have heard about Justin Poirier. He scored 51 goals this year at 17 years old.
Yep.
He's the only 17-year-old guy that scored 50 goals in the league here since Sidney Crosby. So it's kind of unique. And you look at the draft list from the NHL Central Scouting, he's only in the third round because what? He's only 5'8", and sometimes we're not sure about his skating. But I'm going to tell you something. He shoots the puck big time. And he's 51 goals during the season, and he has 10 goals in 8 games since the start of the playoffs. So he's up to 61 goals right now, and he's only 17. Remember that. So Bécomo is led by that guy, by Justin Gill. They have the Boilard brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Those two Boilard brothers were playing in British Columbia last year. They were supposed to go NCAA, but they decided to come to the Quebec League. And surprisingly, they decided to go to Bécomo. And why I said surprisingly, it's because it's not a destination that is really sexy for the players here in Quebec. It's a bit like Prince George or those places that are not really sexy in the Western Hockey League.
Yeah.
And they knew Jean-François Grégoire. Jean-François Grégoire, the head coach and general manager in Bécomo, he was doing hockey school with those kids when they were like 12 or 13 years old. So they remember that. And when he approached them, he said, hey, if I'm making a trade to acquire your rights, would you come in Bécomo? And both of them say yes. So Jules is 19 years old. Raoul is 17 years old. He's a good prospect for this year. So they both really changed the team too with the core that was really that was already there in the last 2 years. So that's why Bécomo is having a lot of depth, and they acquired a good goalie from the Armada at Christmas time. So I think this is their years. But you know what? Everything can happen in hockey. And if you had tell me at the start of the playoff that Batters would sweep Halifax in 4 games,
right,
I would say never is going to happen. And it happened. So
that's why they play the games, right?
Exactly.
Well, Stefan, this has been terrific. I really appreciate it. Before I let you go, you were telling me that you're going to be broadcasting the Men's World U18 from Finland, but you're doing it out of the studio in Montreal. So French fans will be able to tune in for that. That must be a challenge, though, to call games from a studio from the other side of the ocean.
Well, we're doing that, Guy, for the last 3-4 years. So we're really used to that because at RDS, of course, we are the French sister network of TSN. So
right,
we have the feed from TSN, but we don't have the same, we don't have the same revenues, and we don't have the same amount of viewers that can watch the game. So our budget is not the same. So yes, we're going to the World Juniors during Christmas time on site. We're going to do on site all the Quebec final games during the President's Cup trophy, but the Gilles Courteau trophies. Mm-hmm. But for other competitions like the U18, like the U17, like the TELUS Cup, but we're calling it from our studio in Montreal. And we're used to that. And I'm going to tell you something. I've been doing play-by-play for the last 25 years or so. It's a lot more easy today than it was back 25 years ago. Because today with the HD resolution on TV, with all the information that we can grab on the web, of course, it's better to be on site. I would never deny that. But it's better to have those games and doing it off tube than not doing it at all. So the people can watch it, and it's always a fun tournament, the U18, because of the draft coming. So I'm really excited. And in fact, right away, just before I started the interview with you, I was working on my preparation with the Czech team and the Swedish team. So we're going to be ready for that. I have a good collar guy with me, and sometimes, you know what, the people don't even notice that we're not there.
Yeah, well, maybe
honestly,
I shouldn't have said anything. I've ruined the surprise.
No, it's no worry.
You said you're doing all the homework for the European countries. There's not a lot of players from the Q1 Canada's team this year, so
no.
Are you doing a lot of studying for the guys from the Ontario Hockey League and the WHL as well?
Yeah, of course. It's not a good year for Quebec this year. We knew it, and there's a couple of players that could have been there, like the guy that I just mentioned, Poirier from Bécomo, and even Bernier and Boilard from Bécomo could have been there. Thomas Lavoie from Cape Breton is a good 17-year-old defenseman that could have been there. Gabriel Degg, the second goalie of Victoriaville, he was with the team last year, could have been there too. So you know what? You know how it works. Eh? The teams that are still alive in the CHL cannot send their players there. So I think it's a question of fate this year. We have only three guys, and one is a 16-year-old, Caleb Desnoyers, playing for Moncton. But Maxime Massé is there, the rookie of the year in the CHL last year. He had a good season with Chicoutimi, so I think he's going to be an important guy there. And, of course, Canada can win that tournament even if they don't have all the key guys. The guys from Saginaw are not there either, like the Michael Misa and Zane Perak and stuff like that. But it's the way it is. Of course, now what is getting better for Canada as far as the Duff tournament is concerned? It's getting late now. Because remember back in 99 and 2000 and 2001, it was right at the start of the playoffs. So Canada didn't even send a team the first 3 years of that competition. So now at least we have the chance to have players from 48 of the 60 CHL teams, which is, I would think, really good.
Well, that should be a fun tournament to watch, and fans can watch it on RDS and TSN as well, out our way. And the playoffs in the queue, we are set for that now as well, thanks to your help. Stefan, I really appreciate your time. I hope you don't mind if I call you again.
No problem. Thank you, Guy.
Well, that was fun. I enjoyed that one a lot. That was Stefan LaRue from RDS, who has been, 34 years, he said, he's been covering the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League. And I can understand why some in the province of Quebec and some longtime followers of the Q weren't thrilled about the name change. But he mentioned it's reflective and representative of all the players and the franchises that are now located in the Maritimes. So it makes sense. Who knows? If they get franchises back into the Northeast United States, maybe they'll have to change the name eventually again. Maybe just the EHL, the Eastern Hockey League. Like the OHL and the WHL, three letters, a little easier to roll off the tongue. Anyway, that was a treat. I really appreciate Stefan giving up a little bit of time to come on the program. And with that, that is going to do it for this week's episode. Don't forget that you can have early access to all of these individual interviews, usually the same day that they are done. So the conversation I had in the first segment with Brock Otten, that was like Monday. Patrons have had access to that interview since then. Stefan LaRue, this last one, was done on Wednesday. As I'm speaking with you right this second, it's Friday, so patrons have had a couple of days with that interview as well. If you're hearing this at edmontonsportstalk.com on a Saturday or a Monday evening, man, it's been almost a week. So if early access, having an advance to listen before the general public, if that is something that would interest you, go to patreon.com/thepipelineshow. There's a link for it at thepipelineshow.com so you can track it down. Really simple, really secure as well. It's all done by credit card, and I don't see your numbers. It's been a great asset for creators. So if you appreciate the show, you think there's value in what I do, then I would appreciate the support. Next week on the program, well, U18s will be wrapping up, or at least getting into the medal rounds. So we'll be able to update things on that. Canadian Hockey League, holy cow, we could actually be down to some of the teams that we know will be in the league finals by then. And, of course, keeping tabs on playoffs in other leagues as well. Always an exciting time. And then we get into the stretch drive towards the NHL draft. Don't forget to check out edmontonsportstalk.com. You can hear this program on Saturday afternoons, usually at noon, or on Monday evenings, usually at 8 p.m. That usually fluctuates due to the Edmonton Oilers schedule. And with the playoffs, it seems to be like it's all over the place. But you can always tune in Tom Gazzola with the post-game show and, of course, Nielsen and Lieutenant Eric in the mornings, Monday to Friday. The EST Hangout's always a lot of fun. Been a part of that a few times. And it's not just the Pipeline Show that you can hear as a friend of EST, but other local podcasts. Pretty cool stuff, so check that out. All right, that does it for this week. We'll be back next week, and I hope you'll join me. Get out and watch some junior and college hockey. We can talk about it next week here on the Pipeline Show. As always, brought to you by Wilhawk Beef Jerky, and my name is Guy Flaming. See ya!